Hello, I'm Eric Corman, CEO of League of Education Voters and the parent of a 10th grader of the global majority in the public school system who is accessing special education services. In this podcast, we interview students, policymakers, partners, and thought leaders to spotlight education policies, research, and practices so that together we can create learning environments where every Washington student feels safe, supported, and a positive sense of belonging. Dr. Marcus Pimpleton is the board chair at League of Education Voters. He's also an award-winning teacher and instructional leader committed to ensuring that all students receive an exemplary education that prepares them for success in college, career, community, and life. He presently serves as principal of Mariner High School in the Mukilteo School District. He recently served as executive director of secondary schools in the Marysville School District. Prior to that, he served as executive director of equity, partnerships, and student engagement for the Yakima School District. He also served for 2 years as principal of Quincy High School and a superintendent intern with the Quincy School District. As a co-facilitator of the Quincy School District's Access, Opportunity, and Equity Coalition, Dr. Pimpleton was instrumental in facilitating much of the racial equity professional development for the diverse coalition of stakeholders that wrote the Quincy School District's Race and Equity Policy, the first such policy east of the Cascades. Dr. Pimpleton is the 2020 recipient of the Washington Association of School Administrators Howard M. Coble Scholarship, which honors underrepresented leaders preparing for central office roles. Additional honors he has received include a Washington State Golden Apple Award from Cascade Public Media and the Philip B. Swain Excellence in Teaching Award from the A+ Alliance for Education. During the summer months, Dr. Pimpleton continues to serve as director and program administrator for the Seattle School's All-City Marching Band and on Husky Game Days, an assistant director with the University of Washington Husky Athletic Bands. Dr. Pimpleton, what do you see as your greatest accomplishment as an educator?
I don't really think about it in terms of accomplishments, but I would say the things that I'm the most proud of are, one, producing more educators. So I think we have, especially through All City Band and through my classroom when I taught in Seattle, a lot of former students have gone on to become teachers, several of them music teachers, but also just teachers in general, and reflecting on their time and experiences in my classroom as a reason that motivated them to become teachers. I think that producing more of what you try to do is something that always is a source of pride. Also, another source of pride for me is seeing the influence that I've been able to have in different roles on other educators, particularly the racial equity work that we were doing in Quincy and in Yakima. When I initially went to Quincy, some of the advice that I was getting was, don't even really mention the word race over there. And I think a lot of what we are experiencing now in terms of conversations about diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility initiatives, there's pushback to that work, particularly when people don't necessarily understand exactly what that work entails. And so being able to go out to Quincy to engage as a member of that community, to see kind of the work move from concerned that there might be strong opposition to thinking about how do we eliminate barriers, group-based disparities, to embracing that language and really looking at how do we address group-based disparities and developing a policy that reflects our commitment to that. That was something that I was really proud to be a part of.
How hard was it to get buy-in for that?
Everyone wants to do what's best for kids. We do not always agree on what is best for kids. And so starting from a place of shared humanity and talking with one another, agreeing to share our stories and to look at what are some of the ways that policy can create barriers to student success, when you sit down and really have those discussions, real person to person, real story to real story, as opposed to in this philosophical I think we get into the education jargon a little too far when we're not talking about real stories and real kids in a real way that is tangible to the people around the table, then it's easier to come against it. But when we're asking people to share their authentic truths, and when we are show that we're open to those and we recognize our tendencies when we hear those things, when we have all those tools at our disposal, then we can do positive things together.
Wow. Yeah. So it sounds like building a trust, authentic relationships, that's the key.
Yeah, that's really key, is that you sit down and have authentic relationships, and that you have to care about one another. We, in a sense, we care, but until we care enough to really know one another and to hear one another's experiences, it's hard to get moving. But once we are talking about, like, this is something that's impacting my friend or this child that I care about, it's much easier then to build the kind of coalitions that you need to do the right things.
That makes so much sense. Now that you're in a principal role at Mariner High School, what is your philosophy of working in that role, especially in a school that is ethnically and racially and economically diverse and serves 2,100 students?
Yeah, so this is my second year at Mariner. It's a great place. Absolutely love the kids and the families. There's a staff there that is very much so, as I said, wanting to do what's best for kids, but not always agreeing on what that is. The role of a leader is first to make it really clear what it is that we are working towards. That is a process that should be collaboratively. Everyone should have input into what that vision is. As a leader, you come in with some values and some beliefs about what it is that brought you to the work that you do. So you definitely are trying to influence that, but you're also trying to tap voices and get a sense of what it is that we're trying to do here. What is it that we're trying to create? And so that's been a big focus of my work these 2 years. I'm a marching band guy. I steal a lot from other marching band people and apply it in settings that are not marching band. Gary Smith, who was the band director at the University of Illinois, he said that system plus spirit equals success. And that's kind of become like a life mantra of mine. And so I think that as a leader, your job is to develop strong systems and to help to build enthusiasm for those systems, so that when you say, this is how we do things, and people respond positively to how we're doing things, then success is kind of a natural byproduct of that. And so a lot of the work is really trying to build systems and trying to build buy-in for those systems at Mariner. For us, the vision that I've been trying to push before our staff is really one that, you know, schools should be safe and nurturing. So that's a physically safe space, but also a safe place that values who kids are and supports them in being who they are and gives them the space to be who they are. That we have really high quality teaching and learning that takes place, that we're using methods that meet the needs of learners who are sometimes more difficult to reach. Then that we're removing, addressing barriers to learning. So that equity work, what are some of the things that tend to get in the way? How do we identify those things, recognize when they're at play and try to remove them? That we're providing equitable access to opportunity. So one of the ways that we measure our success is, are students equitably accessing opportunities beyond school? Are there group-based disparities in who's taking advanced classes? Are there group-based disparities in how students achieve after they leave high school? And then figuring out what are the root causes of some of those disparities. And then the last one, really enhancing the partnerships with families, students, and communities. We have to have really strong partnerships in order to do this work and in order to see perspectives that we might otherwise miss if there's not the diversity in the group that is making decisions and setting goals and those sorts of things.
So when it comes to forming relationships with students, how do you incorporate student voice in your leadership? How do you engage with students in general?
As people, just talk to them, you know, making sure that you're open to them, One of the things that I did coming into Mariner was set up meetings with a lot of student groups that were already on campus. So I would come in, there was a period of maybe 6 weeks that I came in and met with different groups and asked them what have been the heroes of their academic experience, what have been kind of the villains of their academic experience, what's something that they would want to see change about the school. Then following up by not just asking the questions, but actually trying to do the things that folks shared. Kids are pretty great and forgiving. And so I think what they just look for is for you to just seem interested, greet them when you see them in the hallways, be a welcoming presence, and they will come and talk to you.
What are the students telling you?
In the focus groups and empathy interviews that I had with students leading into becoming the principal there, kids consistently talked about the diversity at the school as a strength, that they appreciated going to school with people with so many different backgrounds and so many different stories. Kids consistently shared that the staff at the school, there are some great teachers there who go out of their way to support them and help them to be successful. Some of the things that kids said in terms of how they thought the school could be improved, kids felt like there was an image of the school in the community or outside of the school. Even I was hearing like concerns about gangs, concerns about drugs, and those are concerns that are in many schools, but the kids felt like that was the only story that people had of Mariner High School. When you are there in the place, it's really a great school. It's a safe place. There are kids doing some amazing things, both in the classroom and in their athletics and extracurriculars. And they wanted the whole story about the school to be told.
Thanks for sharing that. What motivation from your very first day in the classroom as a teacher do you still carry with you today?
The motivation from my first day as a teacher that sticks with me now is the importance of speaking up and confronting injustice, or speaking up and confronting when something is not fully aligned to our values. My first day as a teacher, we were doing our introductions of staff, and one of the teachers, they worked with a population of students who at the time were described as having disabilities that affected their behavior. And so this population of students were seen as having behavior disorders, and the staff member introduced himself saying, you know, it was basically his job to hold the kids until it was time for them to go to jail. It was my first day as a teacher. It didn't sit well with me, but no one challenged it. They just went on and continued introducing themselves. He shared rationale for why that was the case, that students who suffer in these ways, what the statistics say the outcomes are for those students. It's something that even today bothers me that I didn't ask a question. I didn't say, that's not okay. Our beliefs about kids and what they can do and what they cannot do, our beliefs about the impact that we can have on them drives everything else. Like if you don't believe that you can fundamentally change the outcome for children, if you don't believe that we can defy statistics, if you don't believe that collectively we can be difference makers in the lives of youth, it's time to not be in the work of education. As a first year teacher, I wish that I had challenged that and invited my colleagues to challenge that, because it probably, my challenge of that as a first year teacher probably wouldn't have been that great or eloquent, but hopefully it would have inspired some other teachers who had a little more experience to speak up, to address that, because it gave an impression on this first year teacher that it just worries me that students may be going into classrooms where adults have those sorts of deficit views or don't recognize the power that they really have. It's not to say that students aren't coming in with significant challenges or that we all by ourselves can make it so that those challenges magically disappear. But we have to be in this work because we believe that collectively, if we have those partnerships and if we have that great teaching and learning and if we have the right resources and we work to bring the pieces together, that we can make the difference. We have to believe that. I will never be in a space again where someone can say something like that without that being challenged.
And that brings up the concept of equity and how we can better embed that in our K-12 education practices in Washington State. Before we get to that, though, how do you define equity?
I define equity as the state that's achieved when group memberships don't determine our outcomes. When we are unable to predict because of our race or because of our gender or because of our sexual orientation or because of our abilities or handicaps or whatever, when we are not able to make predictions about how we will fare in school, how we will fare in life, how we will fare in community, when we can't make predictions based on that, that is when equity has been achieved. The lens that I use to assess the need for equity work is looking at those kind of outcomes, like how are people, as I said earlier, are there predictions that we can make in terms of who's going to be enrolled in more challenging classes? Are there predictions that we can make in terms of who is going to go to college and the success outside of college? And are those predictions based on a group membership? Then we need to understand kind of what else is at play that's contributing to that, particularly if we believe that everyone is created equal and that everyone can, then there must be something going on that's making this predictable outcome based on whatever that group membership may be.
Got it. So then to embed equity practices into our K-12 education system, how can we as a state do better?
Well, we as a state, some of it is what are we looking at and what are we measuring? Are we really valuing the same things that our families and that our communities are valuing in terms of outcomes? I think that's a part of that. But you also have to figure out what does student A need in order to achieve the same result as student B? Or it's not even so much as achieving the same result, but in order for us not to be able to predict the outcome based on a group membership, like every choice is an element of our success. So at the end of the day, I can want everyone to be college bound, successful, whatever I want for them, but they have an element of choice too. It's just really a concern when groups are routinely not achieving that outcome that you have to wonder if more than choice is at play. When you wonder that, then what are the resources and supports that are missing to help eliminate those things besides choice that are preventing, and you have to provide those resources and supports.
Yeah, I like that. So let's talk about you for a minute. You mentioned heroes and villains in your education experience. Who were the heroes and villains in your case? What was your education journey like?
Well, for me, the heroes were, I had some really great middle school teachers who saw some of the struggles that I was having and who made it a commitment to kind of look out for me. I lost my grandmother when I was in the fifth grade, and she was my primary caretaker. From that time on, the family support was from different sources and not necessarily, it wasn't always the same place.
Yeah.
The home life was not what you would consider ideal. I received a lot of support from teachers, counselors taking me to dentist appointments and teachers making sure that I had school supplies. And there was just a different level of investment of my teachers and my administrators and my counselors from middle school in me academically. Even when I was in high school, I went back to those middle school teachers and they continued to help me and to encourage me. And they were the ones who showed me how to apply to college and and all of those kind of things. So they were definitely heroes in terms of that extraordinary commitment that they made. In terms of villains at the time, I didn't feel like there were really villains. But as I look back, I think that I internalized some deficit views about family and about community because the school was not necessarily celebrating my family, my community, or partnering with my family in ways that would help me to see that. So, like, success for me was becoming something different, totally pushing away from being as different as possible from kind of the environment that I was raised in. And there's actually a lot of strength and great things about my family and great things about my culture that I did not learn to celebrate until after I had left school. Having school be a place that saw those strengths of my community, families that look like mine, would have been something that would have bolstered me and I think would have been good.
Yeah. Did you get that when you went off to college at the University of Washington?
I got a bit of that. When it became really the most aha moment that I had was as a music teacher, I attended a band director workshop in New York that was for jazz band directors. It was a cultural approach to the teaching of jazz. And we were learning to use listening and singing and movement, not so much focused on the written sheet music and things like that, that I had experienced in church, things that I had experienced in home approaching music. It was like, this is really the way to get this music to sound the way that you want it to sound. It was during a time that I was like college and just beyond college that I had this experience, but it wasn't a part of the college experience. But it was just for me like, wait, they're valuing these practices that I had more or less discarded as a part of my music education training. These things were being really valued and celebrated and pushed to the forefront. That was really kind of the beginning of me thinking about, well, what other things about who I am and where I've come from have I ignored or put to the side that have great value to me as an educator and as an educational leader?
Well, that brings me to my last question, which is, if you were in charge of our state's education system and there were no budgetary constraints, what would you do?
If I were in charge of education, like I could wave the magic wand, then it would be much more personalized, that we would meet students and their families and we would ask them about their hopes and dreams early on, and that we would really be able to partner with them in pursuit of those hopes and dreams, that it wouldn't be so everyone has to do X many 24 credits and you need this much of this and this much of that. But it's really about building competencies and do you have the things that you need in order to know that you're going to be successful beyond the K-12 system. That personalization is really important. We talk a lot about students with special needs. What I have found and what I would argue is that every student has special needs. And I think we make it so difficult for people to access what they need that they have to convince us that something is different or that something is, it's almost like we want to say something is wrong with them in order to offer the support that students need. But really, we all have individual needs. We all are individuals. If I could well-resource schools, we would be able to meet each person where they're at. We would partner with their families, with the community network that's supporting them. And we would say, like, what are your hopes and dreams? And work with them to achieve those, because I think that investment would change everything.
Dr. Marcus Pimpleton is board chair at League of Education Voters and the principal at Mariner High School in the Mukilteo School District. Dr. Pimpleton, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to learn more about League of Education Voters or support our work, please visit our website, educationvoters.org.